and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 240. I am your host, James Gilmore. I'm back. We were off for a week and we were doing things which we'll talk about in a moment. But I am not alone. I have returned to the microphone and sitting alongside me, metaphorically speaking, because he's in another town and an entirely other city, in fact, is the internet's Peter Wellington.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Hi. Hi.
I haven't spoken to you in 2 weeks, and you know what? My heart is that little bit sadder for it.
That, I mean, that's generally a thing that happens. I found that without constant interaction with me, other people say that their quality of life dips.
Deteriorates. There's a definite kind of ratio relationship between contact, proximity to Peter, and a sense of well-being. Well, that's why I keep that little photo of you in my
mind.
Just for, oh no, nothing. I've had a great week. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well. So Gamescom then was quite exciting.
Gamescom and GDC, I'll have you know.
Oh.
They were basically in the same building, like different sides of the same building. But yeah, I was in Cologne in Germany, looking at games from the future. Well, not really from the future because they're about now. I played a lot of them. But yeah, GDC was good first couple of days, like Monday and Tuesday. And then Gamescom kicked off and that was huge. It's like the biggest Gamescom they've ever seen.
So, okay. Now, in terms of expos, I've never been to Gamescom. I've never been to E3. Mm-hmm. What I've done is I've been to like a consumer show, like something like a Eurogamer or a REZT. In relation to those things, how big is it?
It's the biggest. It's all of the bigness. It's huge. It's as big as E3, if not slightly bigger.
Wow.
Yeah, it's massive. Apparently, there's a real sort of tug of war going on between Gamescom and E3, and Gamescom is becoming the more useful of the two, apparently. But this was even bigger than last year. 22% up on last year in terms of people showing. I mean, they opened it to the public on the third day, I think. So the Thursday, they opened it. And queues round the block, down the other block, round the other block, out into France, through France and into Belgium.
Okay.
And the tickets had already sold out, like the on-the-door tickets had sold out after half an hour and everyone was queuing for no reason. It was crazy.
So how many people turn up then? Like,
I don't know the number. I don't know the thousands, but it's mad amounts.
Did you get any free swag?
Well,
that's what we're all in this for. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. Their gaming ethics out the window.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
I only came for the free t-shirts.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, like, I tend to not do it, or I'm one of those people who passes it on to other people or gives it for competitions or whatever, because I don't, you know, feel a bit awkward about it all. But no, not really. I mean, t-shirts and people give you memory sticks with their game, the assets on it, you know? So it's kind of just like sending you a little data bump, I suppose.
Were there any booth babes?
Yes.
Well, oh, really?
Not as many as before. I think they are trying to cut down on the whole booth babe thing because it's got a lot of bad press recently, and kind of rightly so, I think.
Yeah.
And wandering around the business area, which is where I spent a lot of the time, where the developers have their own little booths set up and they're showing their new game and they're bringing you in and getting you have a play and stuff. There's not much in the way of, you know, whiz-bangery going on there. Right. It's in the event arenas. So they've got the entertainment arenas, which is where the public go. That's where you see the it's like a rave club, massive robots everywhere, you know, no light, no sense of body hygiene. Right. And it's just like a kind of dank, very I'm making it sound really bad, but it's kind of that club vibe where it's all bright neon lights and silly things going on. There they had the few booth babes. Nvidia were busting out a bunch of girls in white.
Yeah.
Not very much white things.
Nvidia.
Which always, you know, it's kind of that look back to, oh, look, it's the past. Back when this was okay. I keep expecting Nixon to pop up and throw up the V's and, you know, yeah, we'll be well back into the past. And that's always a little bit, really, seriously, are we doing this still? But it was in the vast minority, so there wasn't much going on. I think they're gradually moving away from it.
Well, it sounds like you've had a delightful time. You've eaten sausage.
If Keith was here, yeah,
he'd be all over that.
All over that sausage.
So you've eaten sausage. You've had a German beer.
Yes, I have. I have, actually. There was a steakhouse thingy we went to, I had a bit of a beer. It was nice. Very nice. Very, very nice, polite lot, the Germans. I was very impressed. Wandering around Cologne at kind of 11:30 in the evening, you felt very sort of safe and secure, and it's extremely civilized. I don't know, a lot of the podcast listeners may live in the UK like we do. If you're in America, you may not know. The British have a kind of funny relationship with alcohol. We have a weird drinking culture that doesn't really exist anywhere else in Europe.
Yeah.
You go to France, you go to Germany. In France, people just, like, drink. And it's just something that you do. Like, you know, you'll have a glass of wine around the dinner table. Yeah. And give it to your kid, and your 14-year-old kid has a drink. And they don't get drunk. They just have a drink with dinner. And it's not a big deal. There's not a fuss made about alcohol. So people don't feel the need to kind of binge on it in that, oh, it's naughty and extreme. I've got to do as much as I can. Because it's just, you know, part of the life. Over here, we have this weird... like need to go out and then try and drink as much as we can in the space of an hour and then fall into a gutter, which is not very healthy.
It's not, is it?
You wander around our streets at 11 o'clock at night and it's just like, all right, mate, if I fucking love you, splat, thud, and it's a bit leery. Yeah. Whereas, no, 11:30 in Cologne, very nice.
That sounds like an absolute delight. I'll have to go next time.
It is. It's good. I can pick it up. But, of course, I wasn't there to talk about the beautifully laid out town centre. I was there to talk about games. Games which we'll be talking about very, very soon. We're going to talk about the Nvidia Shield, very briefly. It's just come out in the US and I've had a go on it. We're also going to mention a bit about the new Angry Birds game, Angry Birds Go. What is it? We don't know. Actually, we do, and we're going to tell you. And the large, flat elephant in the room, it's the Nintendo 2DS. What? But first, the update. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you will know that I am a bit of a fan of The Room. That was the fireproof game. It won BAFTAs last year for being so swish. Box puzzler thing. Very clever, kind of moody, really liked it. Ended a little bit abruptly. It was one of the things that the developers acknowledged themselves. Everyone got to the end and went, oh, is that it? I thought there was more. But now there is more. They have just released this very day the epilogue chapter. So this is a free update to The Room. You download it and it gives you basically kind of an outro, another whole extra stage, which will apparently not only wrap up some of the loose ends that The Room had, but also kind of act as a bridge between The Room and The Room 2, which is due out, I think, towards the very end of this year, maybe only next year. I haven't downloaded it yet, but I'm very much looking forward to it. There's no reason why it shouldn't be brilliant. So if you've got The Room, go and grab that right now. The other thing we've noticed this week is that Cut the Rope, which is probably one of my favourite games on iOS full stop. Where do you stand, Peter? Cut the Rope or Where's My Water?
It's Cut the Rope every time, isn't it?
Is it? Ah, you're with me on this. See, I get a lot of dissonance. I get a lot of people telling me that Where's My Water is the fang.
No, you see, no. The beauty of Cut the Rope is that it is a precise game. With Where's My Water, there's a sort of... It's only a little bit more, but there's a sort of slight element of luck there in the way that you draw through the actual mud itself. Mm-hmm. So I think for true hardcore gamers, like you and me, Cut the Rope.
Splendid. All right, then. Well, if you haven't joined the Cut the Rope clan, now is the time, because Cut the Rope is free on iOS. Both the iPhone and iPad versions you can pick up right now, absolutely free of charge. If you haven't got it already, you're mental. But if you don't, just grab it. Grab it right now. Yeah. I'll wait. Yeah. I'll just hang on.
Get it. Have you got it yet?
Right. That's all I'm waiting. Brilliant. You got it. Go. Fantastic. You'll have a good evening. It's a quality game and you know it. The Angry Birds announcements are coming thick and fast. First of all, there was the talk of Angry Birds Star Wars 2, which is going to cover episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the Star Wars franchise. We got into a very sort of twisted discussion about it a few podcasts ago, where we're trying to work out, is it a sequel to the thing about the prequels, the second half of the first saga?
I got slated on Twitter by some of our listeners.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
what for?
Because I dared to suggest that the first three are actually all right.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. No, I slated you on that podcast as well.
Yeah, you did. I think everyone did.
In fact, I think I opened numerous kind of anonymous Twitter accounts, and I was probably several of those people who were slating you, actually.
You are a Wally.
Hey! Yeah. Well, you like the early Star Wars movies, so, you know, who's the Wally now, I ask you. Yeah, well, so they've got the new Star Wars game coming, but a while back they announced, or rather teased, an image with Angry Birds Go! Exclamation point on it, which basically showed a little cartoon valley and a puff of smoke zooming off into the distance. We discussed the idea that maybe it was an endless runner they were going to knock out or something like that. That's something to do with speed and fast pace and whatnot. Turns out, it's not an endless runner. What Rovio have cooked up is an Angry Birds kart racer. Yeah, they've got a live action advert. Go to the site, you'll see it. See, you'll see it on the podcast page, actually, because we link it all in. They've done a little live action trailer which explains their thinking behind the design of this new game, where they went for an endless runner, but apparently it didn't really work out. And then they thought, oh, we'll try a kart racer. And apparently that worked a treat. There's no footage of the game itself yet, and they haven't announced release date or anything like that, but they have confirmed that it is a kart racer. So we're back in this Sonic Racer situation where animals that are perfectly capable of covering distance and ambulating on their own are in carts for some reason.
I think one thing we need to be careful about is what we think of a kart racer. So...
How do you mean?
You and I are assuming that it's Mario Kart, right?
Yes, I am actually. How did you do that? That was eerie.
I know.
Out of my head.
It's strange. So the thing is, though, that if you look at all of the marketing that they're doing at the moment, if you look at everything, all of the images and the video that they released, everything is about the birds going downhill in a kart.
Right.
And if you look at the video, the track is a single line. It's not a loop. It's not a circuit.
That's true.
So it is possible that it is still going to be an endless runner.
But with a car in the center, you're saying. So you'll be piloting a vehicle down a linear track.
The hint, and I think this is something that they potentially wanted to do, is... They wanted to hint that it was a kart racer, and we immediately think Mario Kart. We immediately think Konami Racers on the GBA. We immediately, obviously.
Do we?
Yeah. You could play Cyborg Ninja from Metal Gear Solid in a kart racer. How great is that? Pretty great. But, you know, they're immediately wanting to evoke that. But the more you look at it, it seems like this is like a downhill racing...
Almost like a slalom sort of thing.
Yeah, like, I don't think this is a traditional kart racer in the slightest.
No, I think you might be right. I think we're going for more of downhill race, a slalom or a luge.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
the one where you slide down on a tray on
your
back.
Maybe an endless luger.
Endless luger.
That'd be good, right?
Yeah, that would be awesome. I still don't understand why they're not just flying. They're birds, for crying out loud. Why aren't they flying down the hill?
Well, yeah, I mean...
It's that same problem with Sonic, when they had the Sonic Olympics, when they did that game, put Sonic and Mario in the Olympics. It's like, Sonic, why are you... There's that shot of him, and this is how profoundly the image affected me. I wrote a song about it.
Did you?
Right? Before I came to Pocket Gamer, right, and AppSpy and everything, the thing that... my breakthrough into the industry was that I wrote these songs. Sort of funny songs. It was for a site called ReadyUp, which you can still visit. And I did these songs relating to games for a laugh. One of which was a Duke Nukem song parody about Duke Nukem Forever, which I did. And then I put up online for larks. And then like 2 or 3 days later, I got a call from Gearbox in Texas. And they bought the song off me.
Really?
They bought the rights to the song, yeah. And they said they were going to put it in Duke Nukem Forever. That was my big break. So, yeah, that was. You probably didn't know that in the internet.
Brilliant.
But that's what I did. Another one I did, and it was about Sonic on a horse. It was called Why is Sonic on a Horse? Because I saw that shot of them when they're releasing the Mario Olympics game, and it's got Sonic on horseback doing, you know, the dancey horse event.
Right. It's not right.
And it's so weird. It's like, why you could all these instances? Why is he in a cart? Because he can just run much faster than that. It doesn't make any sense.
Do you remember when Sega created Shadow the Hedgehog, and he was a badass version. He was a black colored version of Sonic who had guns and a cool car and a bad attitude, and it was like, oh guys,
you know, missing the point somewhat.
But yeah, I'm. Do you know what? I'm with you on this. I'm absolutely disgusted. I won't play this.
Perhaps taking me a bit out of context. I wasn't disgusted exactly. I was just, you know, it's a weird thing. I don't think they need to be in carts, but it's Angry Birds. It's got the Angry Birds name on it, and it's the first time they'll have diverted properly from the formula using the birds. They did the bad piggies, but that was just the piggies. And that was more of that amazing contraption style game, whereas this is going to be a proper deviation starring the actual birds. So I'm sure it will do very well, whatever it is, but we'll obviously keep you updated as soon as we get some screenshots and they show us what the game actually is. But fingers crossed for a luge. Now, probably the biggest announcement this week, at least as far as we're concerned, being pocket gaming types, is Nintendo's new handheld console.
Hold on, what? There's a new handheld.
There's a brand new handheld from Nintendo. Oh,
okay. Hold on, I've got to go and grab a quick notepad, because the 3DS only came out a year or two ago, like a couple of years ago.
Well, what happened was, obviously, so let's chart it. So you had the Game Boy,
yep,
and that's what first came out, and then you had the Game Boy Advance,
yeah,
and the SP and all that versions, those different variations on the Game Boy Advance. And then we had the Nintendo DS.
Yep.
So there's a dual screen Nintendo, very lovely little handheld there, two screens, touch screens, lovely. Then the 3DS,
mm-hmm.
So same sort of thing, but now in 3D, which is just brilliant, that 3D. Can't get enough of it, really, you know. It's like 2D, but with an extra D and a headache. So they've announced a new one, a brand new one. Following that pattern, what should this one be? What's the new one?
For 4DS, you can play in time.
You can travel, yes, play through time. You can buy a game, and then when you buy it, you put it in the cartridge holder, and as soon as you turn it on, you've already completed it.
Going through most of Nintendo's catalogue at the moment feels like travelling through time.
Oh, snap!
Oh,
no, he didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, because iterations on very old franchises. Okay, you probably have heard this already if you're paying any attention to the media, but just in case you haven't, Nintendo has just announced the Nintendo 2DS. I'll just let that simmer for a bit. Let that sizzle, as Michael Jackson would say.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So.
That's good.
What the Nintendo 2DS is, essentially, it's a 3DS that has been jammed into a slate form factor. So instead of it being an open and close hinged unit, it is a flat, slate-like, almost tablet-like affair. It's still got the two screens in it, the top screen and the bottom screen, and the same kind of controls, your D-pad on one side and the, you know, analog thumbstick and all the same buttons. The difference is that it's all embedded into a flat panel, so you hold it like a tablet. It's not a flat, thin tablet like an iPad, though. Oh, no. It's kind of wedge-shaped. It's a bit like a doorstop or a very thinly sliced block of EDAM. And as you might have guessed from the title, it doesn't support 3D. It does play all the games from the DS and the 3DS, but it doesn't allow you to view any of the 3D elements of the latter's games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit cheaper than the 3DS.
Well, surely it should be significantly cheaper. Go on. How how much am I saving from this? I heard
$20. There's a video up on the site, obviously. Yeah. It'll be linked in the podcast story. Do go and have a look at it. It shows two of them, one in blue and one in red. The fronts are uniformly black, but the sides and back of them are different colours. Let's start with what on earth are Nintendo doing here, Ben?
What is it? So I became furious when this news when I got this news. I was absolutely livid because Nintendo is making an absolute bodge job of the Wii U, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that they don't get hardware. Like, they understand hardware in terms of things like, well, if we make the original Wii, let's say, for example, if we don't go into HD, then the games will be cheaper to produce, the units will be cheaper to produce, we'll make a profit straight away, and this new motion technology, it's a bit naff, but it will get, you know, your mum and dad involved or whatever.
Right.
That was clever. Like, but whenever they've iterated, except for, I would say, well, I suppose what I'm trying to say is they've got a bit of a patchy record when it comes to iteration. So from the original DS, you get the DS Lite, and obviously I think that that's generally regarded as a big step forward.
Yeah.
But then you get the DSi, and
you get
DSiWare, and you think, that's not really worth the upgrade. Then the DSi...
You get a massive DSXL, don't you?
Yeah, DSiXL. Mm. And, you know, but then again, you go to the Game Boy Advance, which is a bit ugly and didn't have backlighting and all that sort of stuff. And then you get the lovely SP.
Which was wonderful, which I had.
Oh, absolute beautiful little thing. And then the Micro, which was an even more beautiful little thing, but didn't have Game Boy compatibility, which was a big draw at the time and was really very small. And all this sort of stuff. So here's the thing. Nintendo is now a company that excels at making video games. And what they're doing is they are currently supporting DSi, DSi XL, the 3DS, the 3DS XL, the 2DS. It's got a Wii U. It's still supporting the original Wii and the Wii Mini. You know, it's a software company that's making all of this hardware. And you think, guys, for years people have been saying, if you put Pokemon on mobile phones, you will sell a bucket load, right?
Yeah.
But they're just it's like they've just got, you know, they've just blinkered and gone, no, tablets aren't real, oh no, mobiles, like, I don't know what problem you're trying to solve with a 2DS. Like,
well, people think they're trying to solve the problem of making 4-year-olds' eyes go all mental.
Right, which is a thing that hasn't been proven.
No, but Nintendo themselves say that children under 7 shouldn't play the 3DS with the 3D features switched on.
Right.
So they reckon that it's not a very good idea. You see, on the other side of things, like, there was a lot of kind of fallout from this announcement. People going, what? A, it's really ugly. And it kind of is really
ugly.
It
is very ugly.
There's no way around it. It's a very big, thick block, which is a wedge-shaped, and having it just like a 3DS that's open all the time, it does look weird. There's all this vacant space on the bottom half around the you know, the lower screen, the smaller screen, and looking at it, it does look like a Fisher Price kind of affair, like a real toy thing.
Might be their market.
Exactly, that's the thing. We reckon that it's aimed at a younger audience. This is basically a way to get kids on, so they're not fussed about the 3D feature or shouldn't be using it perhaps in the first place. And this is a way for them to sit down and play Mario Kart or Pokemon, like you just said. This is a way to get Pokemon into the kids' hands. And it's because it's a solid block, it's not going to have that problem where you open it and close it. And I remember that the first wave of 3DSs had really dodgy hinges.
Yeah, they did.
So very quickly, once you opened it, it would just like fall back and just the clamshell bit would just break and it would fall open. This is a way to give it to younger children so that they can have it open at all times. If they drop it, it won't break, snap in half. Nice big primary colours, great big solid chunky affair, and they can just play away without the risk of smashing into smithereens.
Can we do a bit of role play quickly, right? I'm going to be...
Oh, go on then.
Okay,
on.
I'm going to be... You can
Hang
be,
on, I've got to shake out.
Yeah, okay.
Lion face, lemon face. All right.
that took me back. So what you need to be is the average game store clerk. So here in the UK, get like somebody who works at a game or a game station or a CAX or something like that, or a GameStop if you're in America or something.
Right on.
And I'm going to be somebody who doesn't know anything about doesn't know a lot about video games, but their son or daughter has just asked for one, right?
So you're role playing as Keith, basically.
I'm going to basically, yeah, I'm playing as Keith.
Excellent.
I've just walked into a shop and you've just bothered me because that's what you need to do. Yeah, so he wants one of the new Nintendo handhelds.
Well, then, madam, I don't know why you're a woman. I've just decided you're a woman.
Keith's wearing a dress. Go on.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Yeah. Well, madam, there are numerous options you can choose from. How old is your child, might be so bold?
No, that's fine. About 6-7 years old. Six years old. I know the age of my own child.
I'm gonna nip off and phone social services.
Yeah. Okay.
But after that, I'll give you
6 years old. 6 years old. Yeah.
Okay, well then, Nintendo, which is the company you're looking for, have just released a brand new console, which might be just the thing for your youngling.
Right.
It is a 2DS.
No, he doesn't want a 2DS. He wants a 3DS.
Does he? Oh, he's quite specific then, isn't he? All right, then. Well, if he wants a 3DS, then I suppose we'll have to get him a 3DS. Why does he want a 3DS, incidentally?
Well, he wants 3DS because he wants to play the new Pokemon.
Oh, you can play the new Pokemon on the 2DS, though.
No. He definitely said the 3DS.
Right, yeah. Well, he's probably a bit confused. He might be a bit simple, your son. I don't know what school he goes to, and I wouldn't speak to his grades if his mother's anything to go by. You know, you can play it still on a 2DS. I know it might seem a little bit initially kind of confusing, but there are a few consoles available with the Nintendo brand, and you can play these games across all of them.
So his friends have got 3DSs, so they won't work together?
Oh, no, they will. See, they can swap games between the 3DS and the 2DS.
Okay, what I'm not understanding here is why are they named two different things then if they're the same thing?
Well, you see, the 3DS supports 3D gaming. You see, it's got a 3D screen. Right. But the 2DS doesn't have that feature. So it only runs the games in 2D.
Okay, so it doesn't run the 3D games, it only runs the 2D games. So if I...
It does run the 3D games, but it runs the 3D games in 2D.
What?
Okay, I'm seeing your point here.
Yeah, this is typical Nintendo. Like, when they released the Wii U, everybody said, people think it's a tablet that you add to the Wii because you've called it the Wii U. You should have called it the Wii sequel, the Wii 2, the Wii X, the Wii whatever. Like, or something completely different, like you did all of the time. Like, Super Nintendo, people understand that because it's a better Nintendo. GameCube is a completely different thing, whatever. The DS and the 3DS, you remember when the 3DS, people thought, is this a revision of the DS? You know, again, there was a bit of that marketplace confusion. But you add 2DS to the mix. Like, you think you're asking for trouble. Nintendo does not have the cachet with the home audience anymore that it used to. It thinks that everyone wants to play Nintendo, but Nintendo's wrong. Like, everyone wants to play Angry Birds. Like, everyone wants to play Cut the Rope. So when little Timmy or little Sally says, oh, I want to get the new Nintendo, and I walk into a retail store and it's Christmas and I'm hot and I'm bothered and I don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm speaking with somebody who, like, you played that role exceptionally well, and if I'd gone on to you, I think, well, you know, there's no Emmy in it, but, like, but, you know, I think you would do really well in that situation. But when I'm talking to somebody who works for a company and it's a 9-to-5 retail job that they don't give a monkeys about, like, what is it to say that they're going to be trained up and know the exact differences between the 3DS and the 2DS and be able to convey those in a manner that says, no, you want to get this one? And what retail store is going, oh yeah, definitely want to make less money on every bit of hardware that I keep on my shelves? Definitely.
You'd have to look into what the markup they get is, but the incentive, I suppose, would be you'd have people coming in, and I imagine store clerks would be wanting to upsell, wouldn't they? They'd be wanting to be like, well, you can get this one, but 3DS is a bit more expensive and more of a markup and potentially more of a profit. I don't know what their cut is and how it changes, but I can understand that it is more confusing for the average parent who, let's face it, is going to be the person who's going to be buying these things. Mm-hmm. Identifying what model they should be getting could be a bit confusing. I'd also be interested to see whether kids actually do want, especially young children, whether they do want the 3D feature or not. Now, I think 3D is a bit nonsense and silly, and I always have, so 2DS sounds like a great idea to me. I'd rather have that, frankly. But the kids, are they going to get it, open it up and be like, oh, Mum, I wanted the one that folds over with the 3D and the thing, and they're going to be crying on Christmas Day?
I don't know. I mean, you see, something like Super Mario 3D Land, for example, that's going to be really hard to complete the bonus levels because...
Without the 3D?
Without the 3D. So there are a few, very, very few examples where the games won't work as well on the 2DS. But I do get your point, and I don't think 3D is that much of a draw. But at the same time, for the amount of money that I'd be saving getting a 2DS, I could just get a 3DS and some sellotape. And just stick the thing down.
That's true. Everyone's been saying that you can basically get a refurbed 3DS for the same price as this, because we're only talking about there's a $20-$30 difference in price. Yeah. It's really not that much.
So I don't know. We haven't gone hands on with it. I'm initially extremely skeptical, and I do feel that this is Nintendo sort of repeating errors of the past. Mm. But the lovely people at Nintendo UK are going to be sending us a review unit at some point.
Cool.
So I'm interested to see what it's like. I mean, you know,
it looks big. That's my thing. It looks difficult to put in your pocket.
Well, so yeah, I mean, my question to that, to play devil's advocate, is how often do you put a 3DS in your pocket? You know, I usually have mine in like a case and I sling it in my bag. So I don't know whether or not that's too much of an issue. But the thing that everybody always says is, you know, never rule out Nintendo. You know, they're a safe bet because they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I agree with that statement, except for recently.
Except for the hardware thing, because that doesn't really apply to the Wii U, does it? Now stores are refusing to stock it anymore.
So, I mean, this is the thing, right? Like, that line of thought only works for as long as they keep producing hits. Mm. And a lot of people do conveniently forget that Nintendo's had hardware errors before, and it has caused them significant problems, like the Virtual Boy.
Yes, that was a bit of a misfire, wasn't it?
Like the Super Nintendo CD edition that was months away from release and then eventually turned into the PlayStation.
Of course, I remember that.
Nintendo has got a history of cocking up its hardware. It's also got a great history of successes as well. But whether or not this is a success, I don't think it's a sure thing. And I think people arguing that, oh, well, you know, it's Nintendo, they know what they're doing, that's not necessarily 100% accurate in this occasion.
Well, I'm wondering if it'll benefit from battery life. I don't know how much extra battery, if any, because I don't actually own a 3DS, so mm-hmm. I don't know. Does using the 3D feature drain the battery a little quicker?
So using the 3D drains it a little quicker. Using the Wi-Fi and that sort of thing drains it a little quicker. The XL has got, strangely enough, a better battery life than the original 3DS.
Bigger, even though, I suppose.
Yeah, even though it's bigger. Oh, yeah, I suppose it's got a bigger battery, isn't it? So yeah, I mean, I guess it would do, and it is quite a chunky bit of kit, so it's possible that they could, you know,
whack a bigger one in there. Maybe. Yep. Well, go and have a look at the trailer. You may have already done so, but we'd be very interested to hear your thoughts. Get in touch with us on this one, because the outcry on Twitter has been roundly negative, but there have been a few people going, well, no, hang on, they might be going for a specific audience, and, you know, I can sort of see what they're going for, but like you say, whether it's a sure thing or not, or whether they're just going to confuse the hell out of parents even more than they already have, remains to be seen. But get in touch, let us know what you think, and we'll tell you what we think as soon as we get our grabby mitts on a unit. Speaking of which, while I was at Gamescom, I got hands-on with the Nvidia Shield, which is Nvidia's own little handheld console thingy.
Okay, what does it do? Explain it, because I don't understand what this the Nvidia Shield actually is.
Yeah, well, basically, it's an Android console that looks like an Xbox 360 controller with a clamshell lid.
Right.
So it's got a screen built into it. You flip up the clamshell, and it's essentially like having one of those little grips that you can get. You know, you can get cases for your Android phone where you like glue it onto a third-party controller, and your phone sits on the top of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like having one of those all of the time. I think it's got one of the very nice Nvidia chips. I think it's got Nvidia 4 inside it, and it plays Android games from the Google Play Store. There's no third party, there's no middleware store like with Ouya or something, which doesn't allow you access to the Google Play. This just gives you straight up Google Play like you would on your Galaxy S2 or 3 or whatever. So you can download and play all the games you've already got. So if you already own an Android phone, you can just download them all onto your Shield. And it gives you joysticks, buttons, all the stuff you'd get from an Xbox controller. Having played it, and it it all works very well. It all works much as you would think. It's a very, very solid, very sturdy controller. In fact, the controls are actually really good. The D-pad particularly is much better than the one that you see on the Xbox, which was notoriously a bit iffy, always has been. It's quite heavy. Very heavy, in fact. That's the thing I noticed when I picked it up. It's like, what kind of weighs a ton? But it's very comfortable to hold because obviously it's, you know, basically a 360 pad. The other thing it does, and the thing I think they've tried to push to the forefront of their marketing strategy, is that as well as playing games downloaded from the Google Play Store, it can stream games from your PC. So you can stream AAA titles from your PC and then just play it mobile on the unit itself.
Right.
So it's acting as like a little conduit. And that's the thing that I've seen demos. If you've seen early demos of it, they're playing Borderlands 2 and they're streaming it directly from the PC and there's very little lag or latency. And it all looks very lovely because the screen has got a very sort of high definition and looks lovely. I didn't see that bit, unfortunately. The demo units they had were just playing games from the Google Play Store, so I had to go on Sonic and Riptide 2 and that sort of thing, which all worked fine. Looked a little bit prettier. Some I know haven't been appropriately optimized for it yet. We're still in the very early stages. It's just been released in the US, which is why we're talking about it. About £200, I think it is. So I guess about $300 or something. Yeah. £300 or something to play a dedicated Android device that basically plays the same games you can play on your phone. And can stream from your PC if you've already got a nice expensive PC and some games to go with it. So it's sort of a big ask up front, and I don't know. Again, it's sort of similar with the 2DS. The market for this might be quite small.
Yeah.
if you're a hardcore PC gamer, then it will be brilliant for you, I think, because it's a great control system. If you genuinely can stream the games, if you've got a decent internet hub going on, then it would be perhaps an awesome thing where you can carry on your PC gaming on the go. And like I say, the unit itself is very sturdy, very strong, and it feels very high quality. Unlike those third-party controllers you feel, and they feel like they've been, you know, hammered together out of bits of discarded plastic. This feels really good. But I wouldn't be prepared to drop that much on an Android unit just so I can play, you know, Riptide 2 off of Google Play.
I just don't really know what the point of it any of it is like I'm trying to wrap my head around it, right? Like the kind of person that's gonna buy this is tech savvy enough to have a mobile phone. They're also probably tech savvy enough to have a computer that will run PC games at a far better rate and visual quality than streaming will allow for. Like, there'll be some sort of lag there.
There's a little bit. I think the demos that we've seen, obviously, it runs very, very well. It's extremely smooth. But I imagine in your average home with your two kids upstairs on Skype and, you know, someone downloading something off Netflix at the time, then it might be a bit less smooth.
And, you know, doing it on a monitor is probably going to be better than... And also, PC games aren't built for on the go. So, you know, and so there's all of that. I guess what it would be cool for is... Like, say, for example, you're tied into the iOS thing. If you've got an iPhone or something like that, you know, you've got one device and everything.
Yeah.
You know, it does everything. But you think, actually, I'd quite like to check out the Android. You know, I'd like essentially the equivalent of another platform. This would be a good way of doing it rather than, like, getting a new phone. Or a tablet, you know, like, but then I guess, you know.
If you're already spending $300, you might as well
just get a tablet.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It feels a bit strange. It was kind of a good device to play. I picked it up and thought, yep, that's comfortable and that's nice. Am I going to get one? No. It does feel very niche. And I guess if you have the money and you're really into your PC gaming wherever you and you want to get that experience in a different room in your house, then it's perfect for you. But I don't know, for the average person, it seems a bit of a big ask for something that offers, I don't know, limited returns.
I mean, if they've priced it at a point where they're making a profit, it can be a niche device, you know, like, and that's fine. But I think what we're sort of daintily skipping around is who cares? Like, like generally... Apart from the people who are going to take this and go, look at all of this cool stuff that I can do with it and bore everybody else around them who doesn't also own one of these things. I don't really know what the point is.
I ask myself that question every time I wake up in the morning.
Oh, James. No.
Oh.
No, I don't see that. That's upsetting.
Anyway, new games!
Yay!
Out and about this week, there is a whole load of building games. Sort of 2D Minecraft types. The forerunner being Terraria, which is by 505 Games. It's often referred to as the side-scrolling Minecraft, but it actually does quite a lot of stuff on top of it. It makes you sound quite dismissive when you say that. But actually, it's a whole bunch of randomly generated worlds that you boot up, and you can stroll about and explore jungles and fortresses, and you can build things. Obviously, you're still doing that Minecraft-esque mechanic of mining through like blocks of dirt and crafting materials into new items, all that sort of stuff. But it lets you do it in the same 2D worlds. It looks quite pretty. In its own little retro sort of way. Mark says they've had a good stab at the touchscreen controls. It's fairly easy to mine and place blocks and stuff, but moving about is a bit of a pain in this version.
Yeah, I've heard combat's a bit naff as well.
Yeah, and there's no multiplayer, which is a bit of a drag.
Oh, yikes, really?
Yeah, there's no multiplayer.
Oh, that's not good.
So if you're used to the PC or the 360 version, then you might feel like this is a bit of a gimped experience.
Yeah.
But it's come out okay, apparently. It's got plenty of pluses. You can get it for £2.99 or $4.99 on iPhone and iPad right now. Oh, but what's this? A 2D side-scrolling Minecraft-type building game.
I haven't seen one of them in ages.
I haven't seen one of them for about 9.5 seconds. Oh, but here's another one. Released at the same time on the same day by a different developer, and I'm sure completely coincidentally. Junk Jack X by Pixbits. Basically, they have gone and released another Terraria-style game on exactly the same day as Terraria launched theirs on iOS. We're imagining it's a complete coincidence and has nothing to do with trying to piggyback off of the popularity of Terraria. However, as Mark has actually had a go on it, he says that it's quite good. In fact, it's actually better than Terraria.
Yikes.
In a number of ways. For example, the multiplayer, absent from Terraria, is present in Junk Jack, so you can play multiplayer. The controls are better suited to the mobile as well, and it's a little bit more welcoming to first-time players. So, even though it's kind of a copy, it sounds like they've done a pretty good job of it, and it might actually be better suited for mobile as it's been built for the ground up, rather than ported over from a traditional console-type format. Two, we'll have to play a bit more of Junk Jack X to tell you which one you should get, really. But it's priced the same. It's £2.99, $4.99, iPhone and iPad. So go and have a look. We've talked about Cut the Rope already today. This is kind of the opposite. So this is like Draw the Rope, I suppose. It's called Fix the Leaks, which is by Emotion Rays. And it is very much influenced by Cut the Rope. It's the same. You play it in portrait. There are small objects. Instead of cutting ropes to drop food into a little monster, you are joining monsters together with ropes. So you're drawing a rope and then pressing play, essentially, and the gravity kicks in. And you're using it to plug leaks in your house, because apparently your house is leaking goo.
Right.
Yeah. I can only assume you've got a big slushy maker inside your kitchen and it's gone mental.
Or you are Mr. and Mrs. Slimer.
Yes, you are. And all their little Slimers.
The little Slimers.
And they've all gone a bit oozy. They're having a bit of a stomach upset.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Poor little.
And so you have to plug gaps with these little furry things. And in order to do that, you have to draw the little ropes up until pivots, and then press play, and then they'll swing, and hopefully they will swing into one of the holes and plug it. You can get it for free on iPhone or iPad as well. Free there too. I don't know if it's any good or not. I haven't played it yet.
It's free. Easy. You can find out, can't you?
Yeah, that's a point, actually. Yeah, why are you listening to me? Go and download it for free if you want to have a look. The next one, oh god, Bulky Picks have gone and done a game that looks exactly like one from Scepter Labs.
Mm.
So we've had one that's heavily influenced by Cut the Rope. Here's one that's heavily influenced, clearly, by Pudding Monsters, which was Scepter Labs' follow-up to Cut the Rope, in which you had a lot of little one-eyed jelly monsters on a grid, and you had to slide them across to join them together to make specific shapes. This one doesn't steal the mechanic, but it does definitely borrow a lot from the look. They are, once again, jelly one-eyed monsters on a grid. which you have to join up. However, instead of sliding them across to one another so they touch, you are drawing lines between them and connecting them via electricity bolts. We're not quite sure why. They don't really explain the rationale of what it's doing or why electricity is a good thing to join these creatures together with. We don't know. But you're just supposed to join them all up, and that way you eliminate them from the screen, I suppose. Apparently not all that fun. It looks very pretty, but apparently you don't really know why you're doing it, and it doesn't feel particularly purposeful, and certainly doesn't have as much direction or polish as something like Pudding Monsters. But if you wanted to try it, it's 99p or 99 cents on iPhone and iPad. What else? So you've got Joining Hands 2. I don't know if you played the first one. Did you play the first one, Peter?
No, but I thought it looked sweet.
Okay. It's another game about joining things together. So instead of you being on a grid, they're a little circular, like bubbles almost, and you're moving these little smiley buggers to adjacent circles, and they all link up with their arms, and you're supposed to get them all to link up together, and that gives you stars. We liked the first one. Problem is, the second one is very, very similar. Apparently to the point where you play it and you think, did I download the right one? Is this Joining Hands? Oh, no, it is Joining Hands 2. Fine. Mm-hmm. So not much of a difference between the first and the second. Still fine. Maybe good if you haven't played the first one. But early stages, not all that different. But still kind of fun. It's 10 tons, and it's you can get it for 69p, 99 cents right now. Max Steel.
Oh, well, this sounds exciting.
Well, clearly. This is your daily Chillingo update. There should be a daily one, really. A week isn't enough, because, you know, they have at least 12 a day. Their latest one is supposedly a movie tie-in from a movie that hasn't come out yet. Apparently, Max Steel is a toy line,
right,
which has got a film on the way, but the film hasn't been done yet, so they've released the game instead. So here's a character that kids, I guess, know from the toy, and obviously it's skewing for a younger audience, I suppose. From what Mark has played of it, it's a pretty standard and slightly tepid Endless Runner. Occasionally it has combat bits, which are well clumsy. The rest of the time, you're just doing your usual charging forward and jumping and collecting things, you know, 3D Temple Run style. You know the score by now,
that
lovely
sounds
listeners.
Boring.
Yeah, you can download it for free on iPhone and iPad. And finally, Bravo Man, Binjar Bash.
Binjar Bash.
Binjar Bash, yeah. It's Namco Bandai, which probably explains the weird title. Mark thought it might be quite cool. It looks a bit retro. It's got a retro soundtrack. He likes all that stuff. And apparently it's based on a franchise in Japan, like a comedy show that apparently goes down very well over there.
Hmm.
Unfortunately for the game, it's pretty dull and repetitive auto-runner, side-scrolling 2D one this time. You just hit crash test dummies, avoid enemies. Apparently he wasn't impressed. You can get it for free, though, for iPhone and iPad right now if you want to.
I don't.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Welcome, listeners. It's been a while, but we are here, back in the hall wherein lies the throne of games. I'm already sitting on it because I have much to tell you, citizens. So come, make yourself comfortable. Sit by the fire, and I will tell you stories of Gamescom and games that have yet to be released. First of which is Galaxy on Fire Alliances.
Mm.
Now, what they've decided to do is, rather than knock out Galaxy on Fire 3, which is kind of what people are expecting, and I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to, they've decided to go off in a different direction. If you're familiar with the series, it's a series by Fish Labs that is, the first two games basically are flight sim type games. Space combat. The two things that they deliver, it's quite fun, space combat, and it's extremely pretty.
Mm.
It's one of those benchmark games where you show people your iPad and go, look at what it can do. Witness the visuals and the glorious bloom. And then your friends go away because obviously you're a very boring person.
Mm-hmm.
But the games themselves are actually kind of fun. This time, they've decided to go somewhere completely different. Galaxy on Fire Alliances is an MMO.
What?
A free-to-play MMO.
Hmm.
Set within the Galaxy on Fire universe. So basically, they're using a lot of the same assets, all the mythology, the lore, that carries over. But instead of it being about you just shooting the crap out of everything on a one-to-one basis, it's about you taking charge of one of the three factions, the Terran Federation, the Vossok Empire, or the Nivellian Republic. You kind of ally yourself to one of those three. And then you're basically world building. So you start off in a homeland and you build up your resources and you get artifacts, and artifacts produce things, and you mine the individual planets for all their various handy resources, which you can scan and find out. Then once you've done that, you start building ships, you build up your fleet, you can build fighters and everything for attack, but you also build vessels that transfer your resources between different planets. Then you start scanning outlying galaxies, so galaxies beyond your own. You send out probes, which you have to do to locate, you know, viable resources and other planets you could possibly grab and start mining. Problem is, there are going to be other people from other factions doing the same. So what you have to do is start allying yourself with other players. Here's where the whole MMO bit comes in. And so you make friends with other players, and you form an alliance, and you try to work as a unit and dominate the universe!
Well, that's really cool. So and then, so when you've got your ships together, you can go out and do a bit of flying with your mates? And
not really. It's pretty much just looking at little bars and stuff. Looking at little counters and things. It's pretty much eliminated the whole flight sim aspect of it. It's exclusively like Eve, I suppose, but without the flying bit.
Is it okay? Now you've mentioned Eve, and I'm interested again. Is it going for the Eve audience, i.e. is it that hardcore?
Well, to be honest with you, actually, I mean, I spent about an hour with it, and I got talked through a lot of the various bits of it. You can actually find a video of it on AppSpy. It's on the YouTube channel and the site itself, where I interview the fellow in charge of it, the head guy, who's Michael Sharde, who explained it all to me. There are quite a lot of menus. It's not, I mean, I don't think, there are a few things that are quite so in-depth and like heavy-going as Eve.
Sure.
But there's plenty of GUI to get yourself lost in here. Firstly, it carries over the good looks from the other game, so it's a very, very handsome thing. Considering it's not based around combat and everything like that, not flashy explosions, it looks really beautiful, and the transitions between menus are very smooth, the menus themselves are very clear and easy to understand. It all looks very, very well implemented. And MMOs are not my thing, I hasten to add. I spent a week with World of Warcraft, after which I had a sudden, like, momentary realization. I had an out-of-body experience where I looked at myself and go, what the hell are you doing? You hate these games. And I deleted it from my hard drive. So I'm not the target audience. But in fairness, it looked very, very slick and kind of easy to understand and quite accessible. And once I saw the Alliance map, so you pan out and go over to the Alliance map and you suddenly see the entire universe presented in front of you, and it's all divided up into these different colors which indicate, you know, who's allied with who owns what sectors and such like. And the idea of, like, us being a gigantic global federation with people, you know, dotted around the world that you're, you know, meeting up with online, that's quite appealing. That struck me as quite cool. The other thing I like is that there is a tactical element to you locating resources and planets. So in order to find out where you're going, as I mentioned, you have to send out probes. The idea is you want as much information as possible. So you have a slider bar where you can send out like one or two or anything up to 30 or 60 or something. So the more probes you send, the better information you get back, the more qualified detail you receive. So you'll have a better idea of what to go, where to go, and what planets will have the best stuff. However, the more probes you send out, the more likely you are to get spotted by an enemy fleet cruising by, and then you may well get ransacked. So there's this kind of gambling element of, ooh, do I want to send out too many? Or am I going to get caught? And I suppose depending on how many mates you have around the local star system will depend on how kind of foolhardy you feel at the time. The Fish Labs are reporting about 1,000 signups per day at the moment. It's a closed beta.
Not bad.
And they're doing advertising through Galaxy on Fire 1 and 2. So you can follow the link and then ask to be signed up and they'll let you in. But they're looking to have about 200,000 active by the end of the year. They're planning to release in November, but if they miss the November date, they're going to wait till 2014 because there's no point releasing at Christmas because it's way too busy.
Yeah.
So you should see it by the end of the year. Obviously, it's going to bring in a different audience from the previous games, but as far as an MMO goes, it looks pretty slick, and it looks like they've thought about it. It looks like they've considered it from a number of angles. The downside for a lot of people will be that it's free to play. Now, the way they've tried to keep it balanced is they've said that they limit the amount of stuff you can buy. So if you're a free-to-play player who says, I'm going to blow 100 quid, I'm going to become the best, most powerful galactic emperor within the space of 30 minutes, it won't let you do it. You hit a maximum of how many you're allowed to have. So they've done it so that one person who buys every single upgrade can be defeated by two free-to-play players.
Interesting.
You can pay to get a bonus, but you will not become invincible. You can get smacked down if someone else just teams up with someone else. You can get your ass handed to you still.
Mm.
So it sounds like a bit of a compromise to me.
Mm.
Which, again, I'm sure a lot of purists will be like, eh, it's still going to unbalance the game. They're saying they've kind of clipped it at a certain point, so it's a little bit unbalanced, but maybe not as much as it could be.
That crowd is the real racing crowd, which is the I want to pay for the entire game up front crowd. So I think actually this beta of those is a good idea.
Mm.
It sort of gives them the opportunity to figure out what that audience finds acceptable and what it
doesn't.
I think
from what I remember from speaking to him, he said the average beta user is signing in for about 6 minutes, six times a day.
Huh, that's good.
So, and that's pretty good. That's quite a good like retention thing. So you're checking in for 6 minutes, six times a day, manning your things and, you know, building some stuff and checking some stuff and then logging out again. And it may well be very conducive to that kind of play. The other one I'll talk about really briefly, because I've only played it for a tiny bit, is Anomaly 2, the tower offense game.
Oh, yes.
That, again, looks very pretty. Some people were a bit disappointed when Anomaly Korea came out, because they thought, ah, here's the sequel. And it kind of wasn't a sequel. It was a kind of a retread of the first game with a new area thrown in. This is the fully fledged, bona fide sequel. It's already been out on Steam and PC for a while. And it should be coming, again, a couple of months' time, they're thinking it should be released. If you played the PC version, it's very much the same game. It's the whole experience ported over, so it looks great. The big gameplay addition this time is that every single unit can be morphed into another one. So if you tap a tank, double tap a tank, and it'll go, and then it'll be this walking mech thing. And you can do that with every single unit you have. So every unit has a dual functionality. So you'll have to keep switching between forms because some units will have weapons that will be particularly useful against some enemies, and you'll need to keep switching between them to use the right weapons on the right enemies. So that's the extra tactical element. It still looks great, very beautiful game, and interesting because it's tower offense rather than defense, where you're striding through a city, blowing stuff up and taking out the towers yourself. No reason why this shouldn't be good again. The first game was fantastic. We really loved it. And this looks like, you know, more, bigger, prettier. And the morphing thing looks kind of cool. And from what little I played of it, it looked like it could be really good fun. So, Peter.
Yeah.
Why don't you perch up here and tell me what you have been playing?
All right, I will. I've been playing games in the here and now. And the here and now includes Ooh. Games such as...
Mr. Relevant.
I know, right? Disney Infinity 3DS.
Oh, well, yes, I want to hear about this.
Good stuff. So, What do you know about Disney Infinity?
I know that they didn't send you a review copy.
That's right, they didn't.
That's always a good sign,
that's
by the way.
That's always a great sign.
Yeah, that means they're really proud of their game, and they're certain that it will get brilliant reviews.
And so they don't need to send it out, because they
exactly.
know...
Exactly, they're so confident that they'll just release it, and they know everyone will buy it immediately, because it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened, right, Peter?
That's exactly what did not happen. Basically, the game has always been marketed, and we've even talked about it on this podcast, as being the 3DS version of Disney Infinity. And yes. Disney Infinity is a game... which is a sandbox environment in which you have different play sets and you have different characters and you bring them all in using figurines that you purchase. You might be thinking Skylanders, and you'd be right. It's along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Differences are the models are a lot nicer than Skylanders. They feel really weighty, really chunky.
These are the characters from Pixar and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Genuinely, I think they're great. I've got them out on my desk at the moment. They're amazing. When Disney eventually goes on to release even more of these characters, I've got a suspicion that I'll probably pick them up, and I'll probably play with them. But I'll probably play with them on the 360 version, because that's the real version of the game. That's the game that was promised. The 3DS version, which... going back and looking at all of the promotional materials now, it makes complete sense, is nothing to do with what has been promised, essentially. So whereas Skylanders Giants on the 3DS is basically Skylanders Giants from the home console, but squeezed, you know, it's comparable at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Squeezed down. This is a mini game collection that costs you £50.
Really?
So there's 50 minigames. they're all of them, absolute rubbish.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The statues that you get absolutely can be put into the game. That's, you know, and I'm sure they'll probably go off and work in other versions of the game, you know, real versions of the game. But once you put them into the game, you kind of don't need them anymore, which is kind of, I suppose, a good thing, because you don't want to be carrying that sort of rubbish around with you in a portable environment. So it's a board game with mini games. It's effectively Mario Party. Probably the best thing I can do is give you an example of a design decision that was made that properly reflects the amount of time and care and attention that has gone into this product.
Okay, anecdote me.
So I'm playing one of the god-awful platforming bits. So it's like a platforming game based effectively on Doodle Jump. So you have to keep going up, you have to keep jumping up. It's not an awful
Which character are you playing?
So I'm playing as Mr. Incredible, I think his name
okay.
is.
Okay, yeah, the dad from The Incredibles.
And I've heard him spout all of his lines, of which he has about three. Multiple times, so I'm already a little bit like, oh, I think I might play with Sully in a minute, or I might play as Captain Jack in a minute. But I'm playing this Doodle Jump platformer. I'm sort of racing up this thing by jumping away. One of the characters that I'm racing against is the car from Cars, the main car.
The car from Cars?
The car, the red car.
Oh, the red one, okay.
You know what I mean? The red
one.
Yeah,
I know the one.
So I'm racing against it, but unlike in something like Fighters Megamix for the Sega Saturn, where the Daytona Hornet can punch you, and it's basically a weird... It looks odd to see it fight, because it's a car fighting, but it's kind of funny. This, it's just a car model that is jumping left and right. Like, just imagine a car jumping on different platforms, and it's so wide that it just knocks into me all of the time. And if you get knocked into, you fall down. So I can't progress, and the platforms are quite thin in places, so I can't get past it either, because it's taking up all of the platform.
Right.
And so I lose because I'm not a big wide car. In a platforming game.
You don't know how many job interviews I've had where the same situation has occurred.
But
sorry, Mr. Gilmore, you're not a big wide car.
You're not a big wide car, mate. You can't come in. You can't
get out.
Yeah, you can't be a.
Then I get run over by a Chevy. It's really quite.
Do you know what? Do you know what? This, this country.
Yeah, it's nice. Oh, these, health and safety gone
these,
mad.
These cars come in here and they take our jobs. So, you know, that's a perfect example. The board games themselves, like, they don't explain any of the rules to you. I ended up just playing the game, and sometimes I'd win, sometimes I didn't. Didn't really make it clear as to why I won or why I lost. There's games where if I put in the time into the characters, if I grind away at the game and just build up the experience, that character will just inherently be better at shooting than a level one character. So I literally stand no chance of winning. The mini games, there are 50 of them, which is quite a lot. I must have played the same rubbish shooting game where I was manning a cannon and I had to shoot little sailing ships. Must have played that five times, like within half an hour of play. Like it doesn't feel like it mixes anything up. And it just, I could understand all of this if this was something like I reviewed the one where they go into a computer game and everybody thought it was going to be a computer game.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, but then it turned into a seaty thing. Yeah, like I actually reviewed that. That was 20 quid and I gave it like a 5 or 6 or something like that because I just ended up thinking, well, you know what? Like it's 20 quid for a kid. They probably haven't seen some of the platforming here. Whatever. It's a bit shoddily put together, but okay. If this was 20 quid, you didn't get any of the statues, you didn't get any of that sort of stuff, but you didn't get the portal, you didn't have to collect additional stuff to get anything more out of this. And I would have kind of thought, well, 20 quid for a NAF minigame collection, whatever, like, fine, give it a pass because it's cheap and it's cheerful. But it's really disingenuous to include all of this stuff. And the most I can find about Disney owning up to the game being completely different is one line in a news story on a website that sort of said that the experience would be completely different on 3DS. And you know that PR spiel, that often just means it won't just be a rubbish ported down version of it. And as journalists, we know it probably will be that. But that's the only line that I can find from Disney that has any sort of bearing as to whether or not it's a completely different experience. And I walked into game and I picked up the 3DS one, and it is practically identical to the 360 and the PS3 and the ones that you want.
Well, in terms of packaging and
in terms
product.
Of packaging, in terms of what you get, in terms of the entire front of it, like, it still refers to it as like infinite possibility, like it's something like infinite possibilities or infinite ways to play or something like that.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
not infinite ways to play, it's 50 ways to play, and they're all awful. So
that's
so,
a slightly less catchy tagline, I got to admit.
So I just find the whole thing really disingenuous, and I feel really sorry because I know that this is going to happen. And listeners, do not let this happen to your
parents,
to your loved one, or to parents that you know, or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, if a child says, "Oh, I want this, and I want it on my 3DS," like if they've got any other platform, get it on that. It, like, I hear even the Wii version is the same, like the same version as, with some cuts, as the 360 edition.
Yeah, yeah.
This 3DS one is not what your child wants.
And I've heard, like, kind of, you know, mixed opinions on the even the console version. They said, yeah, it's all right, it's got some promise, but it's a bit of a, there's not enough there really, and a lot of the, some of the playgrounds are a bit rubbish and that sort of thing. But not as bad as this.
But like the review I kind of turned to, and it was a pretty good review actually. I think it was on GameSpot actually. Surprisingly, I'm not a huge fan of those usually, but it was a really good review, and it sort of said, you know, if you get some friends in, that version is really great. Like the big home console version is really great because there's you can be creative and you can do all this sort of stuff. But the single player is a bit naff, and you want to kind of ignore that. But the collecting, that's a big part of it, and you know playing together, sharing the experience, like the split screen, which isn't on the Wii, but it's on every other version, every other home console version. You know,
yeah.
All of that stuff, that sounds fantastic, and that is what I felt, and like I say, we talked about this on the podcast, I felt that's what was coming.
Yeah, no, that's the impression that I got.
And it's a really awful Mario Party clone that has no thought put into any of the minigames. I didn't find a single minigame that I thought, yeah, that's right. Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
Well, so, I will be giving that a wide berth.
Yes, so interestingly, Disney did send me Planes on Nintendo DS, which is sort of semi-sequel off-spin to Cars. And
yeah.
I'm really interested in that, because actually that looks quite good. So what I might do is I might report back on that in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, see if they can redeem themselves with the tie-in for what effectively is a straight-to-DVD sequel that happens to be playing in the cinema.
Yeah. But from what I've seen, it's Star Fox.
Oh, okay. Well, so, that would make sense, I
think. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. But yeah, so if there's any doubt, don't buy Disney Infinity on 3DS.
Okay, you have been told. Public service announcement for you there, ladies and gentlemen, which brings this podcast to a close. Thanks for joining us for all the GDC and Gamescom info. It's nice to be back. Sorry about the pause, but, you know, we were all overseas and the internet didn't work over there. Internet doesn't work in Germany, at least the places I was at.
I would be interested if they emailed podcast@pocketgamer.co.uk. I'd be interested to know what people did in the week off.
Yeah, well, yes, what did you do?
What
podcast did you listen to yourself? Or did you just sit for an hour in a darkened room?
And just thought about things.
Cursed our names.
I wish James Keith and Pete and John were here.
Or perhaps they enjoyed it. Perhaps they were like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I'm free of these. Oh, they're back.
I wish I could find a way to click that unsubscribe button.
I know. I've got no idea. Anyway, thanks for listening to us this far. Join us again next week. There'll be more chatter, more people, more of all the things you've come to expect from the Pocket Gamer podcast. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.